Hello, I'm Susan Bright, Managing Partner for Hogan Lovells in the UK. And today I'm joined by my partner, Nicola Evans, who is in our corporate practice. And we're here to talk about Build Back Better. We've heard a lot recently about Build Back Better. And so I thought we might start, Nicola, by understanding what is meant by that phrase.
Yes, Susan, it's certainly one of those terms that's fast becoming the buzzword of the moment. We hear it so often that we think we're supposed to know what it means, but actually we aren't quite sure. It was actually first used by the United Nations back in 2015, and it was defined by them to mean the use of the recovery, rehabilitation and construction phases after disaster to increase the resilience of nations and communities through integrating disaster risk reduction measures into the restoration of physical infrastructure and societal systems, and into the revitalisation of livelihoods, economies and the environment. So at the moment, we're hearing Build Back Better used a lot, including by the press, by the Mayor of London and also by UK government. At its core, they're using the slogan to push the proposition that now is the time to redesign our world and change some fundamental global issues that we're facing. So building a stronger economy that ensures long-term health and well-being for all, job creation, tackling climate change once and for all, and building a more resilient and inclusive society.
So the question is really, what does the UK government mean now when it's using the term?
Well, right now, Build Back Better is not a comprehensive collection of government initiatives. Instead, the government is using it as a slogan to demonstrate their general direction of travel. But I do think that is likely to change soon. Early in June, the Business, Energy and Industrial Strategy Committee launched a super inquiry on post-pandemic economic growth. The super inquiry is going to examine whether post-pandemic we now have an opportunity to reset the UK economy, and if we do, the options available to the government to secure sustainable economic recovery. The super inquiry is supported by a series of sub inquiries focusing on issues such as devolution, the levelling up agenda, and environmentally sustainable growth. It's currently at the evidence gathering phase, with submissions being made until the 17th of July. So, although we're still to hear from the super inquiry and its findings, I think it's pretty likely that the UK government will, in Building Back Better, use initiatives and measures to help them progress their long-term goals, many of which were set out in their manifesto. In particular, on delivering on the government's carbon neutral target by 2050 and possibly sooner. And in doing so, we think government is going to take advantage of the unprecedented levels of business engagement that we're currently seeing. And this business engagement was demonstrated through a letter which was sent by more than 200 leading UK businesses, investors and business networks to the Prime Minister in early June. In this letter, business called on the government to deliver a COVID-19 recovery plan that would build back a more inclusive, resilient and stronger UK economy, which prioritises the environment. Specifically, the letter calls on the Prime Minister to firstly drive investment in low carbon innovation and green infrastructure through targeted public investment and clear policy signals to the private sector. Secondly, to focus support on sectors and activities which can best support sustainable growth and job creation. And thirdly, where government steps in to support a business to attach strings to any financial support packages.
So it's clear that Build Back Better is something we need to be aware of right now and also to watch as it develops. Let's turn to the areas where we'll see government focus. First up, I suppose, it's the environment and a green recovery.
Yes, Susan, that's absolutely right. The green recovery is the goal which is by far the most closely associated with Build Back Better. It's clear that the government sees the recovery process as an opportunity for a big recalibration. So I'd expect commitments to prioritise investment in low carbon infrastructure and especially electric vehicle infrastructure. The finance bill of 2019 to 2021, which is currently making its way through Parliament, is actually already helping to push a greener economy through the introduction of a series of measures, including, firstly, establishing a tax support for zero emissions vehicles, and also preparing the ground for the introduction of the plastic packaging tax from April 2022.
And after the environment?
Well, I think there's likely to be significant investment in infrastructure, which is going to help the government deliver on its commitment to levelling up. And it'll also help reduce regional disparities across the UK. So in its 2019 budget, the government did set out extensive investment plans. And the government has recently restated that it intends to follow through with these plans, and in particular, spending in the areas of public health and governmental infrastructure. In addition, we've heard that investment is also likely to be focused on broadband, especially in the hardest to reach places, on railway, strategic roads, and also on motorways. And the government has also committed to significant investment in R&D and innovative technologies.
And what about mental health and historical inequalities?
Well, there's certainly some evidence at the moment that the government is actively considering ways to improve work-life balance, as well as social care, which has a very direct impact on mental health. And we've already heard Nicola Sturgeon raise the possibility of a four-day working week for Scotland. On historic inequalities, again, it seems that the government views the current recovery process as a unique opportunity to address historic inequalities, a topic which has become much more pressing following recent events, as well as statistics suggesting that COVID-19 has caused a disproportionately high number of deaths to people from a BAME background.
So what's all of this likely to mean, Nicola, from a legal perspective?
Well, until we have sight of the detailed government plans, it's pretty difficult to comment meaningfully, Susan. So what you're about to hear are actually my views based on experience. Firstly, procurement processes, I think, are likely to have a greater focus on the use of zero carbon processes and materials to deliver a project. And they're also likely to focus on the carbon credentials of the supplier itself. I think it's highly likely that the taxation system will be used as a tool to deliver on some of these objectives. And I've already mentioned some elements of this are already reflected in the latest finance bill. We may also see the introduction of more developed legal and regulatory requirements for companies, requiring them to report publicly and in more detail on the climate risks associated with their businesses, which will enable investors and other stakeholders to make an informed decision about that corporate. I also think that we'll see a continued uptick in companies investing in technologies, products and services that reduce emissions. For many companies, doing this from a standing start just won't be possible. So you're likely to see M&A, collaborations, joint ventures used to give companies access to the right technology. And we're actually already seeing this in the energy sector, for example, where you have the large oil majors making significant investments into or even acquiring companies that have created electric vehicle charging technology. And I think this trend can only be accelerated with a government focus on reducing emissions. Also, and as mentioned earlier, UK government is likely to call upon businesses more to help them deliver their goals. This may result in a need for collective action amongst businesses to achieve the required goals, either because they can't be achieved by an individual business, because it requires more than one business to make an impact, or it could be that the project would be too expensive for an individual business and would therefore put them at a competitive disadvantage. But Susan, we're beginning to stray into areas of competition concern, which are obviously much more your area to comment on.
Yes, a call by on business by UK government to act in particular ways potentially does raise competition issues. And in fact, we've seen a significant increase in clients talking to us about competition law and sustainability. And we put that down to greater interest on the part of business in wanting to collaborate in order to achieve sustainable outcomes. So agreements between competitors or between businesses at different levels in the supply chain are an important area of competition law, which may impact on collaboration, which has a sustainability aim. So it's important to work out right from the beginning how to navigate competition law. Some forms of collaboration, of course, won't raise competition issues at all, and others may risk doing so, or there could be a risk that the collaboration can move from its original purpose and spill over into areas where companies should be competing. Perhaps helpful just to have some practical guidance. The key things to do are to set out right up front the genuine socially responsible sustainability objective of the project and to explain why a particular business can't achieve that objective alone, so why it's necessary to collaborate with others. Then it's important to ensure that all internal documents about the project and documents shared with others reflect that. Then to work out how to achieve the objective with the minimal impact on competition, and to be clear about what must be done collectively and what each party can do alone. And then work out what information must be shared and what must be discussed in order to undertake the collective part of the project and limit the information sharing and discussion to that. And having set out those ground rules, it's really important to take care to stick to them as the project proceeds and not to allow any spillover effect, i.e. not to start discussing sensitive information outside the information that's strictly necessary for the collaborative part of the project. It's really easy for people to become lax as they get to know each other and as the project proceeds. And so that's an area to take particular care.
Thank you, Susan, for your comments on collaboration. When I was speaking earlier, I was also referring to M&A as a possible route for some companies to get access to the right projects. Are there any particular competition aspects in relation to M&A that people should be aware of?
Yes, absolutely. And it's important when thinking about M&A and merger control that people also think about joint ventures. It's often the case that people collaborate through joint ventures and don't necessarily think about the possible need to make a merger filing, for example. But turning to M&A activity generally, it is now increasingly the case that environmental factors are, as you say, a driver of M&A activity. And merger control policies are beginning to change to take more account of these strategic drivers. For many companies, going green has become more and more important, and there are competition authorities around the world who acknowledge the importance of environmental factors in undertaking a merger control analysis. I have to say, though, it's still at a relatively early stage, but we are seeing signs of environmental factors becoming important in key areas like market definition, in the substantive analysis of the merger, and also in the acceptability or otherwise of remedies. So going forward, I expect that there will be greater scrutiny of deals where there's a restriction of competition in a market where the players are engaged in environmentally beneficial projects, and also where a large incumbent, for example, looks to acquire a smaller competitor, particularly where that competitor is an innovator who may represent a threat based on its green credentials. These are sometimes known as killer acquisitions. So that's where a competitor takes out a smaller rival early in its growth.
It's been great to have the opportunity to share our thoughts on Build Back Better with you. And if you do have any questions or queries, please do get in touch with either Susan or myself.